Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, January 14th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Thanks, Nancy. We'll check in with you at 12:23. It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. In our next segment, we'll explore local getaways for Valentine's Day. Right now, wholesale inflation rose slightly last month, well below analysts' expectations, suggesting that inflation may not be reaccelerating. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And let's go through the highlights of the most recent producer price index report. This is the report on wholesale prices that businesses pay and eventually pass along to you, the consumer. It was some welcome news in the fight against inflation, and it really did kind of tamp down on some of the anxiety that inflation might be reaccelerating.
Yeah, the core for this index was very good, excluding the food and the energy components. There was no change this month. And sequentially, if you look at the inflation rate for 12 months and then over 6 months and then over 3 months, get a sense of what's getting better or worse. It's getting better. It went from 3.5% down to 2.4%, down to 2% over 3 months. And that's for the core. Now, the headline inflation rate is a bit more stubborn. Its three-month pace is 3.3%, the same as its year-over-year pace. And it was up by 0.2 percentage points in December. But seeing a decelerating pattern in the core is certainly good news if it's sustainable.
And does this lend more credence to the belief, at least as far as the Fed is concerned, that it's that last mile ahead of the 2% target that's the most frustrating?
Well, I don't know. I suppose it depends on the kind of shape you're in now, which mile is the most frustrating. When people run the New York City Marathon, I think that those last couple of miles are really hard on them. For me, I could never get started. So for me, it's the first mile of the marathon that's the hardest.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, Bob.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's hard to get inflation down to the target rate. But the point is, the Fed has a 2% target. They've been missing it for about 44 months in a row. And at some point, if they don't hit it, you have to wonder if the target is relevant. The Fed keeps saying it's relevant, but is it relevant to say that it's still your target and it's aspirational and you're not hitting it? Is it an aspirational target? Is it a real target? Do I care what they're trying to hit if they don't hit it? If my employer says he's going to pay me $500,000, but he keeps paying me $50,000 a year, does that keep me on board? Or at some point, do I quit and go somewhere else?
And then what does this say about what the consumer price index is going to tell us later in the week tomorrow?
Well, I actually haven't vetted the particular components that feed into the CPI. But because the core is in good shape, this appears to be pretty good news. The food components were better behaved. They fell by 0.1%, and that's certainly good for the CPI. And the services component was weak in the PPI report. So I think there's reason to think that we might get a break out of the CPI. But, you know, we're not interested in the month-to-month numbers. We're interested in the broader trends and where it's headed. And the economy is picking up. You may have seen the NFIB report today, which jumped very sharply. And if the economy is reaccelerating, it's going to make that job of keeping inflation down a little bit tougher. The budget deficits are large, and then we know that Trump is thinking about raising tariffs, and so we've got a lot of challenges that inflation is going to have to deal with. So, good PPI this month, but lots of hurdles to go over.
Bob Bruska, Chief Economist, Fact and Opinion Economics in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, finding a short but sweet getaway for Valentine's Day.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Valentine's Day is a time for romance, but places are filling up fast, so planning now is key. Joining us with creative ideas and advice and is Cindy Richards, Editor-in-Chief of SheBuysTravel.com, based in Chicago. Cindy, thank you for joining us today. And if you are a parent with children, chances are your Valentine's Day rotates around the acquiring Valentines to give out at school and candy to distribute at school. And when it's all said and done, there is very little time for the parents to enjoy Valentine's Day. But we're going to flip the script on you and give you some places where you can go to enjoy the Valentine's Day weekend. And on top of that, you have 1 month to book someplace.
Absolutely. You know, marriages need tending as much as children do. And Valentine's Day is a great excuse to get away. When I think about booking hotels, you know, there are different reasons to book a hotel, right? You might be on a road trip. You just need a nice, clean place to stay overnight with a comfy bed so you can get up rested and drive again the next day. But when it's a romantic vacation, where you stay really matters. And I think there are a lot of ways to do that. And you want to pick a hotel, a resort, a property that fits your personality as a couple, right? If you happen to be the family, like you're talking about, where it's really, you know, you've still got little kids and you're really focused on kids, maybe you're only going to get one night away. You can get grandma to come and babysit overnight. So you want to stay close. And if that's the case, you know, we're blessed to be in Chicago. And even if you live in the city, a night away downtown in a fancy hotel is always a big treat.
Yeah, that is a lot of fun. I mean, you can and more than that, even above the romantic components of a Valentine's Day trip, just having time to yourself. That's a win in that's a win by on its own. You don't have to worry about where people need to be for at least 24 hours.
That's right. You can eat what you want without someone saying, "Ooh, what is that?" you can have a glass of wine and not worry about what's going on. So I think, you know, there are a lot, many options, obviously, for hotels downtown. But a couple of my favorites, depending on your personality, I really like the new Sable Hotel at Navy Pier. And, you know, so then you could get there, you could do all the cool Navy Pier stuff, maybe go to the theater, eat at one of the restaurants, and, you know, not having to go out in a February winter to get some dinner. Or, you know, you can do like one of the Grand Dame hotels, the old Intercontinental, where you can swim in this gorgeous 1920s Art Deco pool. Or, you know, the Palmer House, which has just been there our whole lifetimes. And, you know, how many of us have actually stayed there?
And then if downtown Chicago is not your speed, you could say, hey, let's go to Lake Geneva and to the Playboy Club, or for the place that used to be the Playboy Club, and that's Grand Geneva.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's a great resort because everything's there, right? You get fine dining, you get live entertainment, there is an amazing spa. You know, you could spend a weekend there and just stay there. I mean, if you're going to go that far, if you're going to go to Lake Geneva, I think make it a weekend, right? And stay two nights, really splurge if grandma will keep the kids for the whole weekend. But, you know, once you're there, you've got everything you need right on the property.
And then if you want to celebrate Valentine's Day, just like Abraham Lincoln did, you could do so at the rustic luxury cabins of Serenity Springs in LaPorte, Indiana.
Yeah, not far drive, just, you know, past Michigan City. And it's not really the way Abe Lincoln did. I mean, these are luxury cabins with a whirlpool for two.
Now,
right,
wait a minute. He taught himself the law by candlelight in a whirlpool. That's what my history book told me.
I missed the whirlpool part, but yes.
So many options near Chicago, and I know some people who are listening say, well, what about Kohler? What about this place? Well, I mean, these are all within about an hour's drive of the Chicago metropolitan area. I mean, I can vouch for Kohler, but that's up by Sheboygan, and that's about a two-hour drive from here.
And another really nice place up there is in Elkhart Lake, the Osthoff Resort. They're condo-style resorts with, you know, so you can get a lot of space. You get a living room. You get a beautiful bedroom. And there's one of the best spas in the world is there. And there's fine dining there as well. And it's right on the lake, which is lovely if you want to take a nice winter walk in the snow.
Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today on this Travel Tuesday. Coming up next, the latest on the future of TikTok.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The TikTok saga continues as the Chinese government considers having Elon Musk acquire the social media platform's U.S. operations to avoid a potential ban. Joining us with the latest is Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show and Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And where does this fall on the spectrum of plausibility? Is this something that is really going to happen, or is this just merely some people thinking and talking out loud? Because TikTok refers to this report as a complete fiction. So what should we believe?
that's a great question. There are lots of authorities who disagree with each other on this very subject. The framework for this whole conversation is that the accusation against TikTok and its owner, ByteDance, which is a Chinese company, largely, as most folks are concerned, controlled by the Chinese government, are concerned about national safety. In other words, national security, insofar as ByteDance, apparently, according to the accusers, is monitoring U.S. Consumers' behavior, their location, and all kinds of other private information, and doing so with a proprietary algorithm that gets people to keep scrolling for 24 straight hours. So that's basically it. The app is attractive. It's exciting. It's got people watching for hours and hours and hours. And because the Chinese government theoretically, allegedly, not only is sending along videos, they're also sort of monitoring citizens in the United States. That was the reason the court case has gone all the way to the Supreme Court. So will they sell the U.S. operation to skirt the Supreme Court, the impending Supreme Court decision, by selling the thing to Elon Musk? Very possibly, but it is all in flux right now.
And this was based on a Bloomberg News report from last night. Now, when Elon Musk bought Twitter, I mean, Twitter, even for its outsized influence, it punches above its weight because all the politicians and all the media people are on Twitter. But it's still well below all of the other social media platforms, which is the reason why it was kind of inside Elon Musk's price tag. TikTok, though, for an entire generation is essentially TV for them. It is their main form of visual entertainment. So how are you able to properly value what TikTok is worth and try to put a proposal together before the deadline next week?
You know, what's interesting is that value. That's a great question. The valuation is going to have to do in large part, and it's going to be impossible is the short answer, but to value it properly. But valuation in this case is really about momentum and trends in terms of what's going to happen next matters hugely in terms of the financials. But most importantly, how, just to your point, it is TV for a generation younger than I am, perhaps younger than you are. I'm not going to make an assumption, but I will say that
you would be correct.
Okay, fair enough. But just so you understand, the most downloaded free app in the United States, Apple Store on Tuesday, 300 million people just downloaded Xiaohongshu, which is an alternative to TikTok, because they figure, hey, if the Supreme Court's going to let this go through, let the suit prevail, and then they're going to have to go somewhere else. But Xiaohongshu, just for people's perspective and the concerns that were raised in the first place, means little red book. Now, little red book was Mao's.
Yes.
I mean, just in case people don't know this, this is Mao Zedong's sayings. Now, Mao is not known as a progressive individual, or never was. And I'm laughing, but, you know, he caused the famine in China. I mean, it was all kinds of terrible things in addition to the Communist Revolution. So all that said, that is people don't care is the nutshell. It's hard to value. Yes, it is. But people don't care. They just want their TV. You know, I want my TikTok TV.
Paul Hochman, president. president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. There's disagreement over the amount of money available to pay for a new teacher contract in the Chicago public schools. Crews battling wildfires in California face another challenge from strong winds. Travel Tuesday, we put a focus on trips based on events such as the Super Bowl or activities like golfing or running. Starbucks unveils a new policy involving customers hanging out or using the restrooms at all of its stores. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed. The Dow is up 85 points, NASDAQ down 14, S&P 500 up 4.5. We have 12 degrees right now at O'Hare under mostly sunny skies, but it feels like 6 below with the wind chill. It's 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, leaders of the Chicago Teachers Union argue that the city's public schools have the money to settle contract negotiations without mid-year budget cuts. CPS officials maintain that's not the case if the district will still be required to make a pension payment that City Hall is counting on. This is school CEO Pedro Martinez.
This pension payment has been traditionally the city's responsibility for a century. Everybody, for a century, for over 100 years. When the previous mayor moved this payment onto CPS's books, we were able to do it because of the ESSER flexibility. But now we're in a different budget environment.
Union leaders are pointing to CPS's more than $1 billion fund balance as evidence that it can afford to approve a new contract. Crews battling fires in the Los Angeles area now dealing with high winds that are expected to last until tomorrow afternoon. Meantime, security is tight in the impacted areas.
Here on the scene of the Eaton Fire, there are numerous law enforcement at every intersection. The California Highway Patrol, the National Guard, and the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. At night, during the mandatory curfew hours, they're on watch for potential looters. At the same time, firefighters, they're on watch for hot spots that could flare up as the wind gusts increase. Craig Figner for CBS News, Altadena, California.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. The markets are mixed right now. The joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com, based in San Diego. Jim, thank you for joining us today. And it's been kind of a sluggish start to 2025 for the markets, but potentially they could pick a direction this week. We have new reads on inflation, and earnings season is now underway. And how will the markets react?
Well, my take has been since mid-December that the market was set up for a 5 to 10% correction. Some of the averages have already done 10%. And I think the headwinds, Rob, are expectations very high for President Trump as he comes into office. The Federal Reserve kind of throwing cold water on additional rate hikes, and inflation proving a little sticky. And I think we saw that in today's PPI report and the CPI report that comes out tomorrow. So I think those are the headwinds that the market is going to continue to face. Ultimately, I think the S&P could pull back to about 5,700 before a more tradable low is established.
Now, when it looked very obvious back late in the evening of November 5th that Donald Trump was headed back to the White House, and then the futures markets took off just like a rocket, was this investors hoping that it would be very similar to that episode of Dallas when they woke up and Patrick Duffy was still alive? They'd wake up and it was 2017 again, and those 2017 economic conditions would just magically snap back. Was that the prevailing belief? Or did people kind of know that the challenges existed, but wanted to believe that maybe somehow we can go back to the way things were?
There will be some legitimate changes. Under President Biden, the U.S. Passed more significantly economic rules of 100 million or more than any other administration in history. So you cut back on regulation, the cost of government regulation. The notion is that that should help growth. So you're right. Some of it is an emotional reaction. There is some legitimacy to new priorities, focusing more on economic growth than the prior administration had. So it's justified. I just think the economic realities, Rob, are going to be tough to achieve in a short amount of time. And some of the people who voted for President Trump, maybe for the first time in their lives, voting Republican, are likely to become impatient as we go, you know, over the next year or two.
And then and this is a much larger conversation, though, but the idea, and we have so much information available to us and so many perspectives available to us, for someone who deals in dollars and cents and someone who deals in economic policy and tried and true economic policies, when our collective impatience, that has to be frustrating from somebody who knows policy and how to implement it and how it works and the time horizon for it to work.
It is. Bigger problems take longer to solve and address. And I think one of the biggest problems that we have is the amount of debt that has accumulated, especially in the last 7-8 years. $36 trillion. Last year, the budget deficit was 6.4% of GDP. That's never, ever happened before outside of World War II, the pandemic, and the financial crisis in 2008. So getting that down means cutting government spending by $1 trillion or more. So here's a situation, Rob, where the prescription of cutting back on deficit spending to alleviate the amount of debt that needs to be sold is the right prescription, but it will have a depressing impact on economic growth. And then you have to deal with, as you know, expectations and the level of people's patience. So if I think President Trump has 2 years. Midterm elections more often than not go to the party out of favor, which means the risk of losing the House is very high, which means it's going to be really difficult to maybe make lasting changes that in some cases are truly needed. We have to cut back on the amount of debt that we're accumulating because otherwise it just doesn't end well.
Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager, MacroTides.com in San Diego. Thank you for joining us.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. A growing trend combines trips with events, whether it's playing golf, running marathons, or attending iconic sporting events like the Kentucky Derby or the Super Bowl. Joining us to discuss is Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale, Arizona. The website, TravelBTA.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. And let's start with an event vacation that is literally near to you and dear to many Chicago sports fans, and that is people going to Arizona or to Florida for baseball spring training. It's not too far away, and that is one form of event travel.
Absolutely. In fact, we do a lot of inbound travel, and a lot of our clients come to us because they want us to plan those trips around having an experience of Arizona while you can watch a lot of baseball as well, including those Cubbies and the White Sox.
Now, I think a lot of people might have dipped their toes into the water of event-based travel last year, maybe if they wanted to save a few bucks on the Taylor Swift Eras Tour. They discovered it was cheaper to buy tickets and go see them in Europe and turn that into a 3 or 4 day vacation as opposed to dropping thousands of dollars to see her at a stadium in the United States. And were you aware of that? And what did people learn along the way?
Right. You're stating the obvious, that Taylor became this phenomenon, not just for attending concerts, but for traveling to see Taylor. And we had clients that were contemplating Miami and other destinations in the U.S. And you're right. It was determined that it was more affordable to go on a European destination and to be able to not necessarily just see Taylor once, but to almost visit two or three countries where you might have the opportunity to go to more than one concert. And that's a real reality. We've had clients who just recently went to the Vancouver tour, which was obviously a lot of hype with the closure of the concert. And they had previously had us plan summer travel to Europe to see Taylor.
Now, when we talk about events like the Super Bowl or the Kentucky Derby, the most important thing, if you're going to either of those events or events of that stature, is just not wasting time. Because, I mean, I've been to Churchill Downs, not during the Derby, but I've just driven there, and I just imagined what it must be like on race day, and I can think of all of the ways in which you could waste hours trying to get into the facility or around. So when you plan these vacations, how do you avoid those choke points of standing in line and just not seeing what you came to experience?
Seamless travel is so important to the experience. And when you're going to these bucket list trips to see your favorite entertainer or to be right there in front of race on race day for whether it's the Derby or the Formula One racing, you really want the experience to be the entire trip, starting with the planning. Like, a lot of thought goes into whether or not you're going to splurge on paddock tickets for Formula One. What's the best situation? Take the Kentucky Derby, for example. That's oftentimes a popular venue for group travel, three or four couples celebrating a 40th, a 50th birthday party, bringing their friends together. And you really have to juggle whether that's going to be a better experience renting a private villa with a chef and having kind of the entertainment come to you, arranging, you know, bourbon tastings and having a private venue versus kind of the amenities that would be offered at a hotel. And certainly part of the benefits of this packaging is getting you up front and center, getting opportunities to sometimes, you know, be on the racetrack, or it's simply just making sure you get to and from the stadium without those 2 and 3 hour hiccups dealing with traffic and security.
Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors based in Scottsdale. Find her online, travelbta.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, a top coffee shop chain reveals a new bathroom policy. It's
your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
In a major policy shift, the coffee giant Starbucks now requires customers to make a purchase if they plan to hang out or use the restroom. The new rule aims to prevent disruptive behavior and ensure safety at its stores. We're joined by Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And this is a policy that was implemented over 6 years ago in response to a high-profile incident. And it seems like they're moving beyond that.
Well, it is time. I mean, for a number of different reasons, but number one, you know, safety first. And I think that Starbucks has found that their policy of just letting everybody in to sit all day without buying a drink has been very disruptive to just doing business in general. But a lot of the people who've come in, as they've seen, are not always doing the right thing. Whether they're, you know, vaping or sitting around or causing problems for other customers. It is that model of being the nation's coffee shop to hang out is not working anymore.
And every business has a policy regarding loitering. So really, this isn't beyond the pale. But at the same time, though, I mean, how many people use Starbucks as a third space these days, a place where you can do a little work away from home and away from the office?
Well, that is another issue, because I can't tell you how many times I've gone into a Starbucks, you know, to buy something, sit down, maybe do a little bit of work, but I can't get a table, and probably more than half the tables are people sitting with their computer working without purchasing anything. They're just using it as an office. And how does that work for bringing in sales? It's a bad model.
Now, if the COVID-19 pandemic never happened, is there a possibility that this policy, which was implemented in 2018, might have been done away with years ago?
Oh, I think, you know, had the pandemic not happened, I think they would have moved this policy up and enforced it much quicker. But they, you know, Starbucks has certainly had their problems with trying to implement it and then implementing it against, you know, people who had only good intentions, but it blew up in their face. So I think in addition to the policy, training is going to be a major issue, because now these employees are going to be given, you know, instruction. If somebody's just loitering and not buying anything and causing a problem, they're going to be calling the police. And that's not something that Starbucks has been known for in the past.
Now, with Starbucks is in a state of transition, there's new leadership in place. Is there a distinct possibility that as part of this reorienting of the company to try to get it positioned for the second quarter of the 21st century, that maybe it could do away with having indoor seating entirely, that it just becomes order on the app, go in, pick it up and leave?
Well, that's funny that you say that, Rob, because I was in California last year to a Starbucks exactly as you described. They have that model out there where You cannot go into the store at all. It's strictly drive through. And if you're ordering a coffee, you stand outside a window and essentially they pass it through. So it has no seats, strictly employees in the building and no access to the building. So that is a model that you may end up seeing very soon in more places.
Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.